Welcome, Hope Grown Faith, to another Monday Mom Mentor, where we are equipped and encouraged to nurture the hope of Christ in our homes. So today I have with me somebody from my writers group, Hope Writers. Her name is Beverly Froud, and she is going to share about how God is nurturing her and helping her nurture the hope of Christ in her home. Welcome, Beverly. All right, so Beverly, tell us a little bit about you and your family.
So my husband and I met in kindergarten. And didn't marry then. We were much older than kindergarten when we married. But we have been married for, I think it will be 17 years this summer. He's a lot better at keeping up with it than I am, actually. We've got three kids, a daughter, Cassidy, who is 15, a daughter, Lauren, who is 10, and a son, Deacon, who is 4. So ours are way spread out. I grew up a preacher's kid. I'm not in a preacher's family anymore, but that was part of my upbringing, which was wonderful and challenging at the same time. I taught high school for 8 years and worked as an elementary principal for 3 years. And then our lives were just completely out of balance. And so something had to give, and I wasn't going to leave my family. So at that point, I left full-time work, and now I've worked for the last 3 years part-time mentoring new teachers in charter schools here in Arkansas.
Wow, very cool. That is a hard decision, hey? It's something that you wish you didn't have to make between your career and your family, but I'm glad you found a way to kind of have both without neglecting either. That sounds like a big, big decision-making time in your life. How did God fit into that? Did you feel like he kind of helped you decide that, or did you feel kind of left adrift there, or?
Well, you know, I choose honesty and transparency because I think it's really the only way for us to live. And the truth is, I don't know how much God orchestrates and how much we want to try to blame on him, just for lack of saying in a better way. At the time, I had no plans to leave. At all. I actually didn't ever plan to be a principal. It all just kind of happened. And that's the long story I'll spare you the details of. But I found myself there and am grateful for it. I can't say that I would do it differently. But I wasn't prepared for what it would require of me. And so I did it. And I think I did it fairly quickly. But I also did it at the expense of myself in a lot of ways. I was not the best version of myself. I was not protecting my spirit and my emotional well-being in the ways that I needed to be able to function as the healthy person that God made me to be. And so really what happened was some burnout. And we came to a point where I felt like, yeah, God is telling me you can't do this anymore. But when I look back through my prayer journals from that time, what I see is not just God saying it's time to step away. I see myself, sorry about the dog in the background.
Okay.
I see myself and read myself saying, God, I can't do this anymore. God, I'm exhausted. It's too much. I don't even remember who I am. And it was almost like God stepped in and gave the courage that I needed to be able to say, well, this is what God wants for me. And so I don't think it's that God didn't want me to be a principal anymore, or that God didn't want me to do that job anymore. I think that God wants me to be who he created me to be. Mm. And I think that at that moment in time, that job was it wasn't happening in that context. And so I don't think it was about removing me necessarily from a specific place or position or person. I think it was about removing me from a situation that was complicating my intentional design.
I love that. Yes, he does that. He wants to bring us to wholeness, to full redemption, right? To life to the full. And if you weren't in a place where you could even move toward wholeness, then it was time for a change. I've experienced that myself too. But this is not about me. This is about you. So tell us a bit about your connection with God. Just, you know, obviously you've shared a little bit about this time when you were a principal. What about the other times in your life? Is there some things that you do in your life that you find really connect you well to God? I mean, you mentioned your prayer journal. Is there other things that God has used in your life to help you connect with him?
Yeah, I think for me, being I'm not like a super let's go get muddy kind of person, or let's go climb the face of a cliff. I'm not into that. But being outside, just there, I mean, we were, the earth that we live on was created by the same creator who made us. And it just makes sense to me that we are all connected together and to each other, and that we care for and feed one another, at the risk of sounding really kind of woo-woo, but whatever, I like a little woo-woo. So it has to be, for me, there has to be some removal from all of the stuff, from the noise and the voices. And so I have a place, really, and it's my front porch. And I can just go to the front porch and sit there with the coffee or the tea or the prayer journal, or not the prayer journal, or whatever, and just spend time there with God. And that's a big deal. There's, with the three kids in the house, there's a lot of talking, a lot of communicating, a lot of noise. And so, especially when I'm feeling depleted, I have to physically remove myself from that. The other things that I found really helpful would be breath prayers. And that is, it's a twofold benefit. So it forces you, when you are intentionally engaging in breath prayer, you stop enough to realize, like, okay, I need a breath. And that inflow and outflow of oxygen does a lot of things to us physiologically. But also, the Holy Spirit intercedes for us with groanings and utterings that we can't understand. And so I think in those breath prayers, where we may only share 2, 3, 4 words, a feeling even, not even words, just offering up the state that I'm in to God, that breath prayer is a moment that allows me to recenter in the middle of whatever craziness is going on. And there's always some level of craziness here.
I love that. We've had a couple of mom mentors that have mentioned how breath prayers have really helped that. Is there something specific that you say with your breath prayers, or is it just kind of whatever comes out in the moment?
Yeah, you know, it just, there's not anything specific. There's not anything prescribed. It's different depending on what situation I'm in. I can remember early in my marriage, whenever Chad and I would have a disagreement, I can remember so many times praying, God, help me want to be right, because I'm pretty good at fighting and I didn't even want to get right. Like, I just, let's just have the fight and I'm going to win it. And so I had to pray for God to help me want to have a right heart, instead of being prideful and angry and arrogant and putting that man in his place. And, you know, all of those things that the world tells us are really better and more appropriate, but truly aren't loving. So that was one that I pray a lot. Help me want to be right, God.
At first, I thought you meant
it depends.
Sorry, I forgot. I shouldn't interrupt you with the leg. At first, I thought you meant you help me want to be right, like in this argument. But I understand, yes, what you're saying. Help me to be right with you. Help me to want to be right with you instead of right in this argument.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Because I felt right in the argument. I didn't need any help there.
So tell us a little.
You know, the other breath prayers vary.
Keep going.
Sometimes it's patience with the kids. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's, you know, just God, help me be present. Just help me be here. Help me be here. Help me be here. Instead of distracted by being up in other things that are going on. You know, help me to see them the way you do. Help me see them the way you do. When someone is especially grating or difficult to love, or, you know, less me than I would like them to be at times.
I love that. Hey, if anybody's listening, you want to type some of those prayers into the comments so that we can remember them for later. Help me. I'm just going to type one in. Help me want to be right. I'm just going to type that one in. Maybe some other people will share some of them as well. I don't want to forget them. I love them. When I go back and edit this video later, I'm going to type them out too. So our original very short conversation was about the fruit of the spirit of gentleness. And you had some things that you felt like God had shown you about being gentle and being strong at the same time. So tell us about that.
Gentleness has always been the really tricky one for me, because I am not by nature a gentle person. I'm empathic, so kindness comes a lot more easily than a lot of other things. I don't want to hurt people, for sure. But also, I am pretty strong-minded, and believe it or not, have mellowed out in my old age of 38. But my husband is really good at telling me things that I don't especially want to hear. And for a long time, he has championed, just because it's true doesn't mean it needs to be said. And that was very antithetical to my teenage self. So as I've matured some, you know, I've learned about the value of gentleness of speech, but I think it's very different to hear about the practice of gentleness from someone who is naturally a gentle person. So I say often, like, I'm kind, but I'm not sweet. That's just not my disposition. It isn't. I'm a little salty. And so trying to figure out how to be who you are while also being gentle can be challenging. So what I have learned, what God has shown me, is that very often we culturally define gentle with this connotation of weakness. And that's just not what gentility is. If there's weakness, there's no need for gentleness, because gentleness is really about the control of power and strength. You know, gentle is the breeze that God sends us when he's capable of hurricanes. It doesn't mean that he's weak or that he couldn't do much. It means that he chooses to treat us with care. And so I've come to understand that that's what gentleness means for us also. It's not that we are weak or incapable or doormats or, you know, any other number of things that mean that that would mean that we lose self in that. Gentleness is about controlling and restraining in a way that demonstrates love and respect and kindness to other people. And really, that's about the greatest display of strength that I think a person can exercise. It's nothing to show how strong you are. It's everything to know how strong you are and to choose to engage with people and with the world in a way that measures that strength and reserves its massive display for when it's really needed.
Wow. Yeah. When you were talking, I was had this picture in my mind of a baby. We wouldn't consider a baby gentle, but I mean, you would consider, you would think maybe of a gentle giant or somebody who has this massive strength and is intentionally controlling themselves not to use it. But I really like that, that image that you're portraying there of gentleness is self-control. It's not just...
Yeah, it's amazing how the fruits of the Spirit are all braided together. You know, the more you learn about them, the more you realize that they are, they're almost impossible, really, fundamentally, to separate from one another, because you start thinking about, you know, peace and joy and how those two things are connected. But really, that makes sense, too, when you consider the fact that they all come from the same source. So they all start at the same, you know, well. And then the streams, you know, go out from there, but they all come from the same place.
It makes a lot more sense when thinking about Jesus as gentle too. For the longest time, I thought, Jesus, gentle? Okay. I mean, does that mean that he's weak? But you're right. I mean, if Jesus is gentle, that means that he's controlling himself not to show his power. I mean, if he can stop a storm with one word, he could also start that storm with one word. And he's intentionally choosing not to.
Yeah, and I try so hard when I'm thinking about things that are really difficult to understand for me, like being gentle, to try hard to focus on the example that Jesus set instead of the things that people tell us. Because the things that people tell us are unintentionally infused with the things that they've been told by other people and our cultural experiences. And so going back to Jesus, I think, is always important. And I have struggled constantly with, you know, the whole scene of Jesus in the temple and throwing over the money changers. And I mean, in the South, we would say he threw a hissy fit, but we know that Jesus was without sin. And so what he did, it was righteous indignation in its purest form. And, you know, even the way he chose to stop a storm with a word, you know, that exercise of gentility, even in the display of power, it shows me that gentleness is not the absence of power or strength, but the control of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I suppose that he could have gone into the temple and just killed all the people instead of just flipping over their tables.
Yeah, God opened the earth to swallow people and things up, you know? Mm-hmm. So there were definitely other options.
True. Wow, that's really great. Thank you for sharing about this. Yeah, it's really helped me understand gentleness better, especially Christ's gentleness. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, how God has impacted you and your family. So how has God changed either your relationship with your kids, or how has he impacted your kids or you as a mom? It's kind of a broad question, but tell us. Sorry, too broad.
From very early, I was intentional. my husband is also a Christian, which I know is not the situation everyone is in, but because we have that in common, it drives the decisions that we make together and the way we treat each other. So we may not necessarily sit down every time we have a disagreement and say, what does God say about your position? And what does God say about my position? But we, you know, our lives are governed by the principles that God asks us to live by, you know, treating people with love and kindness and patience and gentleness and all of those things. So it has a huge impact on my marriage, just because that is my decision-making limit. You know, with my kids, I think one thing that's been really, really important for me to try to help them understand is grace. I think if you have grown up in a Christian home, or, you know, if you've grown up in a Christian culture, there's a lot of like good girl, nice guy syndrome, where we are essentially raised to believe that our worth and value comes from being a good girl or being a good boy or a nice guy or whatever, you know, just following the rules and doing what people want. Certainly I want my kids to make good choices. Absolutely. I don't want them to reach adulthood with, you know, a litany of regrets for all the things that they've done and the mistakes they've made. But also, I want them to understand that they will never meet perfection. And I want them to understand grace and the role that it has. And so I try really hard to acknowledge with them when I'm wrong, when I've messed up. Last night, tucking the little one gets tucked in first, and I'm in the middle kid's room, and the little one just keeps yelling at me, "Hey, Mom, hey, Mom, hey, Mom," while we're reading a story, and I ignored him, and then I answered him, and then finally I yelled, what do you want? And I don't even remember what he wanted. Attention. That was the response. He wanted attention from his bed where he'd been tucked in. So, you know, I read a few more lines, and then I said, "Hey, Deacon, yeah, I'm sorry I yelled at you, but I shouldn't have done that." And he said, "It's okay, I forgive you." So, you know, letting my kids know from the beginning, I'm not perfect. And this is how you take that imperfection to people, and you don't allow it to destroy your relationship. You own it when you're wrong, and you take it to God when you're wrong. He already knows, and he loves you, and he forgives you. And so I think in this season, you know, things are different for different people. Our oldest is 15. Our lives are different than if your oldest is 3. But in this season, I really want them to understand relationship with the Father and the role that grace plays in that.
Like what you said about owning it when you've done something wrong, and then you're modeling that. I think that's a huge thing for most of my kids. They don't want to own it when they've done something wrong. They don't even want to apologize when they've accidentally tripped their brother or something. Like if it's an accident, it's so easy to own because you really are sorry, aren't you? But that's, it feels like that kind of goes back to original sin, right? Adam and Eve did not own their sin.
Yeah.
They immediately wanted to blame it on somebody else. And so we do that too. So it's constant fighting there.
Yeah. And that's so important because, you know, God already knows. It's really interesting to me when we start talking about, you know, the things that God's asked of us and the behavior and all those things there. Even when you look at the, you know, Old Testament law, there are reasons for all the things he asked. God knows our sin. He doesn't need us to tell him what it is for him to know. The thing is, until we're prepared to acknowledge it to him and own it, he can't help us heal from it, because he can only help us with what we're willing to do. He gives us choice and free will. And so as long as we choose to live in denial of the things we struggle with, or the sins that constantly plague us, or the ones that we fall into now and then, you know, we are not able to heal from those things because we won't go to him and say, you know, I know I have an attitude problem. Or I know that I am not patient enough or whatever it is.
That is so wise. That is what I'm going to tell my kids now from now on. If you can't own it, you can't heal from it. Like it'll just be inside eating you up. That's great. I just wrote that down. Thank you. Lots of great things that I've been writing down today. Thank you. All right. So do you have any, advice or encouragement for moms who are wanting to, you know, nurture the hope of Christ in their homes, but are just finding they're super busy with just everything else that comes with being a mom?
Yeah, I'm not a homeschool mom. That is not my calling. And I was a teacher and I did enjoy that. That is very different from homeschooling. So we don't have like an allocated study time or really we don't have a lot of like, okay, let's all sit down. I've prepared a Bible lesson. Here's the Devo time. What we do have is a lot of what's referenced in Deuteronomy. You know, you talk with your kids while you walk along the way, when you get up in the morning, when you go to bed at night. And so I think the first thing I would say is stop pressuring yourself to do whatever Pinterest version of Christian momming you think you're supposed to do. That's number one. Stop comparing yourself and your family to anybody else's self or family and the way they do it, because there is far more than one right way to do almost everything. Those planned lessons and activities, those are awesome. And I know a lot of people who do that really, really well. It's not me, and that's okay. But I am really good at having uncomfortable conversations with my kids, even when I hate it. And so when we're struggling, when I'm struggling, we've had conversations about body image and the way God created us and how we're to view ourselves. And, I don't try to pretend like, oh, I feel great about everything about me and I never struggle. That's not how the conversation goes. It's, you know, sometimes I get hung up on those things too, on comparing myself to other people or worrying too much about physical things. And I have to remind myself over and over that God made me the way he wanted me. And that there are a lot of things that are more important than this or something else. So number one, stop pressuring yourself to do it some certain prescribed way that you think you have to do it. Number two, just show up when they are coming to you, when they sit there looking at you, not saying anything, and they just won't go away. That probably means that they're there to talk. Pray for those opportunities for God to make the conversations happen, make time for those conversations to happen. Pray that you will be receptive to those moments and that you will know and understand what's happening, when it's happening, and then just be willing to have the conversation and even say, you know, I'm not sure. Let's get our Bibles and figure that out together. There's nothing wrong with that. Don't think that you have to have all the answers. And I also, the other thing I have to do a lot of the time is ask, do you want advice right now or do you just want someone to listen? Because sometimes my tendency to want to deliver wise counsel is not well received because it's not well timed.
Yeah, so, right.
be sensitive to that too.
Yeah, that's great. I love that you mentioned even just to pray for those moments, right? That God would encourage, you know, help your children to feel comfortable enough to come to you with those things and be able to open up, because that doesn't happen in every family. Not every child trusts their parents enough. I think that some of those things, you know, if we overreact to things when they're little, then they don't trust us with those things when they're bigger. So one of the things I'm really learning is to remember when they do something wrong, don't react.
So that, yeah, and that's so hard if you've grown up in that good girl, nice guy kind of thing, because it's all about following the rules and making sure that you do the right things. And, you know, I mean, I was good at giving grown-ups what they wanted. And that meant that I became an adult who was really good at being what other people wanted and really bad at honoring myself and who God created me to be and what I needed from a situation. And so being aware of our own, not to use a buzzword, but triggers, really, the things that set us off and that really, you know, kind of light a fire under us of shame or insecurity or whatever. You know, my two older daughters were pretty well behaved. My son is a handful, and figuring out how to parent him without breaking his spirit is freaking hard. And also, I have just realized that there are going to be a lot of times where he doesn't make me look good. Like, he doesn't make me look like a good parent, because he's not always a well-behaved child who's under control. But it's more important to me that I raise a healthy, well-adjusted, spiritually well adult than it is that I have a kid who always makes me look good. But it's hard, because there are lots of times some of that stuff starts and everything inside of me wants to fix it and squash it and shut it down. And that's not always the right answer for him.
That's right. That's where that grace thing comes back in again. Grace for yourself, grace for your kid, grace from God.
That's
grace. That's right.
Yeah.
So thank you for this. This has been really, really wise. Thank you for sharing with us. So do you have a blog or a book or a podcast or anything online where we can connect with you further?
Yeah, no book as of yet, and no definite plans to make one happen. That's a maybe in the one day kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I do blog at beverlyfroud.com, and also you can find me on Facebook at Beverly Froud Writer. And I'm actually working on a week of breath prayers that I'll send out to email subscribers. So if you go, there should be a link on the Facebook page, and also on my website, there should be a link to subscribe to the email. So that'll go out to email subscribers within the next few weeks when I get it done. But those are the two best places to find me.
Awesome. That's great. I'm excited about those breath prayers. I love that. All right. Well, thank you again for coming. We've really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much for having me, Christy. I appreciate it.